This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. Israel has launched new attacks across the Gaza Strip one day after the end of a week-long ceasefire, leaving nearly 175 people dead. The latest airstrikes targeted the cities of Rafah, Khan Yunis, and Maghazi refugee camp. The Israeli army says it hit more than 400 targets overnight. According to Gaza's health ministry, the death toll in the besieged territory since October 7 has surpassed 15,200. The number of wounded has also risen to 40,000. 70% of the victims are women and children. The Gaza health ministry says the regime forces have deliberately targeted 130 health facilities and put 20 hospitals out of service. It says hundreds of wounded are being treated on the ground. Since October 7, bakeries across the Gaza Strip have been one of the targets of Israeli attacks. Dozens of bakeries have been either bombed or have gone out of service due to lack of fuel. As the total siege imposed by Israel on the already blockaded territory continues, food is running out, and bread is becoming more difficult to get with each passing day. Now several residents in Gaza City have constructed a makeshift bakery from iron sheets and firewood to make bread.
We were compelled to come here as there are no bakeries available. The people here who are our friends are baking bread to aid the community. Procuring flour is challenging for us, as a 20-kilogram bag costs around 300 to 400 shekels, which is a substantial amount. The people are suffering, as you can see.
In response to the catastrophic situation in the Gaza Strip, particularly in the northern region, we thought of a way to serve our community. We crafted this handmade with iron sheets to provide bread for people and their children to help them survive and fulfill their needs after all basic necessities were cut off. We first offered the service to the people in return for a symbolic amount which helps cover the cost of the firewood we collect. However, our efforts and manpower are solely dedicated for the sake of God and our community. We are people, we are human and humane. We urge the international community to pay attention to our bereaved people, who have sacrificed more victims and martyrs in the pursuit of freedom. We call on them not to apply double standards, but to grant Palestinians their right to a normal life. We seek attention for our cause, so that Palestinian children can smile like children everywhere else in the world, rather than being slaughtered unlike any other place in the world.
The head of the International Committee of the Red Cross has warned of a dire situation in the Gaza Strip, saying that a lack of essential supplies is very concerning.
Everything in Gaza is at a breaking point. Civilians are displaced. Numbers of injured people, severely injured people who are waiting for treatment in hospitals that also are reaching a breaking point where nurses and doctors have been working 24/7 with very limited resources. So, of course, we're doing everything we can to support the provision of healthcare. People are living in constant fear of violent death. People are struggling to survive with now, again, little food and water because of the resumption of the fighting. And in all likelihood, having aid getting inside Gaza will become automatically more challenging. So, of course, it's a matter of grave concern to us. Well, we don't have precise reports, but what I can say is the resumption of fighting was intense again. And of course, it's a new layer of destruction coming on top of massive and unparalleled.
UNICEF spokesman in the Gaza Strip says the Nasser Hospital in the territory is overwhelmed by wounded children. James Elder says inaction by the influential countries is allowing Israel to kill children there.
Bombing, and I am at a hospital. There was a hit about 50 meters from here. This is the biggest still functioning hospital in Gaza. It's at 200% capacity. Yes, this is a hospital. The health system here is overwhelmed. This hospital simply cannot take more children with the wounds of war. There are children everywhere. These children are sleeping. There was a bomb literally 50 meters from here. I cannot overstate how the capacity has been reduced of hospitals in the last 7 weeks. We cannot see more children with the wounds of war, with the burns, with the shrapnel littering their body, with the broken bones. Inaction by those with influence is allowing the killing of children. This is a war on children.
Clearly, words, clearly pleas from the world do not make a difference on those who have the power to stop the killing, the maiming of children. So let's at least look at the damage being done. This is Ahmed. He's three. Yeah. Ahmed's favourite sport, football. Ahmed's right foot amputated because of the destruction that caused to his house when family members were killed just a few weeks ago. The bombing has started again now. We cannot, in all good conscience, allow this war on children to continue. We cannot allow more children in Gaza to suffer as Ahmed, beautiful eyes, still face, still terrified with a look of a memory and something he will now have to learn to live with. It has to stop.
Hezbollah resistance movement hits Israeli military targets in retaliation for strikes in southern Lebanon. In a statement, the group said that it targeted the headquarters of the Israeli Army's 91st Division in Biranit, as well as Jal al-Alam military base. Hezbollah fighters also struck a gathering of Israeli soldiers with missiles. Hezbollah says the attacks were in response to the regime's Friday bombing of southern Lebanon that led to the death of two civilians. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has announced that two of its members have been killed in an Israeli attack in Syria. In a statement, the IRGC said the two members were serving as military advisors. It did not elaborate on when and how they were killed, but Syria's defense ministry has reported an Israeli rocket attack on targets in the vicinity of Damascus early on Saturday. The regime has launched hundreds of airstrikes on its northern neighbor over the past years. Iran maintains an advisory mission in the Arab country, helping it in the face of the foreign-backed terrorism. Back in 2017, the advisory assistance helped Syria vanquish the Takfiri terrorist group of Daesh. Iraq's Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani has warned the U.S. against any attack on his country. Sudani was speaking in a phone call with the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The Iraqi premier slammed Washington's latest attack on the Jurf al-Nasr area, reiterating his country's commitment to safeguarding its borders and sovereignty against any aggression. He was referring to the November 22 U.S. airstrike that led to the death of eight people near Baghdad. Since October 7th, Washington has time and again launched airstrikes on Iraq, claiming that it targets resistance groups. This is Iraqi resistance factions have targeted U.S. bases in the region over 70 times in recent weeks in response to Washington's support for the Israeli regime amid the Gaza onslaught. Pro-Palestinian rallies continue across the world on a daily basis to demand an end to the Israeli brutal aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
Yeah, definitely. There's events worldwide happening right now, protests all around the world, USA, Canada, Australia, all the worlds in the Arab region have also been protesting. Everyone wants a permanent ceasefire in Gaza, and we want and a free Palestine as well.
I think that the whole concept of a pause in the first place is inhumane. So we're going to, you know, give you some time to recover, and then we're going to bomb and annihilate you again.
In Auckland, protesters marched through the Auckland Central Square, chanting slogans and carrying placards and Palestinian flags. They called for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. Around 30 similar events were held across New Zealand, from Invercargill in the south to other areas in the country's north. In Indonesia, tens of thousands gathered in the capital, Jakarta, to express solidarity with the Palestinians. The demonstrators slammed the Israeli regime for waging a war on Palestinian civilian population. In Yemen, a military parade was held to express readiness to defend the Palestinian cause.
On this great day, the Yemeni people affirmed their readiness, as Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi said, open the path
brothers,
for us,
the Mujahideen in Palestine. These crowds demonstrate the readiness of the Yemeni people and their awareness and concern for the central cause of the Islamic nation.
From the land of Yemen, from Sana'a, we come with a faithful army, an army that carries faith. You Israelis do not possess the same strength of will that we possess, and we will support you. Our Palestinian brothers, we will not abandon you. We will fight alongside you with our sons, ourselves, and generations to come until victory is achieved and the occupying enemies expelled from the Palestinian land.
These crowds are popular crowds supported by the entire military sector and the armed forces in all their formations. The popular crowds are ready and prepared to support the Palestinian people at the first opportunity to confront the Zionist and American aggression against our people and our region.
In Jordan, people hit the streets of the capital Amman to demand the international community abide by their commitments in defending the rights of the Palestinians. They also called on their government to cut off all relations with the Israeli regime and to cancel a gas deal between Tel Aviv and Amman.
...of Palestinian scout associations and children under 16 years old. Palestinian resistance factions organized a rally this Saturday in front of the UNICEF headquarters in Damascus to show solidarity with the children in Gaza. This after the representatives of international organization refused to accept the children's letter, pushing them to publicize their message instead.
The Israeli army deliberately bombed hospitals, including Al-Ahli, Ash-Shifa, Al-Quds, and the Indonesian. All the hospitals were put out of service because of the Israeli and American warplanes that kill and mutilate bodies.
We demand UNICEF to fulfill its responsibilities in helping protect civilian infrastructure, such as schools, hospitals, and water stations, and to ensure the provision of basic medical and food supplies for Gaza's children.
The children staged a performance on the massacres committed by the Israeli regime against kids in Palestine. They also chanted slogans and carried banners condemning war crimes committed against children and demanded the removal of the blockade imposed on Gaza.
Palestinian children amidst the rubble remain steadfast in the path of resistance. We will not surrender and will only bow before God. The Palestinian child fully understands that resistance is the only and optimal choice for the liberation of Palestine.
We are here to support the children of Gaza, and we call on the United Nations to support them, provide milk to them, and to help us stop attacks on hospitals and schools as they are safe zones for children.
The children affirm that future generations will increasingly embrace resistance as the sole path to reclaim their occupied lands and to restore their legitimate rights, especially after they have witnessed the total failure of the international community to stop the bloodshed. In Gaza.
Every child in the world must have access to medical care, clean water, healthy food, and a safe environment. But the children of Gaza don't even know if they will live to see another day. Yet, with innocence and resilience, they resist the Israeli tyranny. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Dubbed Earth and Freedom, the latest demonstration in support of the people of Gaza was staged in Rome's northern suburb of Monte Sacro on Friday. The initiative, organized by a string of groups including the Student Collective for Palestine, the anti-Zionist movement in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and some housing movements, took place as Israel resumed air raids in Gaza after a seven-day pause in fighting.
Students from across Italy have been rallying in support of Palestinians because they are aware of the ongoing genocide in Gaza, the largest open-air concentration camp in the world. Meanwhile, the whole of the international community stays silent.
As bombardments have resumed in Gaza, we are trying to organize as many initiatives as possible in support of the Palestinians. Today, we are also calling on Carrefour to end its complicity in Israel's slaughtering of Gazans.
Also on Friday, the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement launched the Boycott Carrefour campaign, calling on supporters of Palestinian rights in Italy to boycott the international supermarket chain Carrefour. The multinational retailer has been often accused of supporting Israel's illegal settlement activities in the West Bank, and it has been described by some activists as, quote, a genocide facilitator.
The West must stop the Zionists if it really intends to help the Jews. Only a Zionist sick mind can call Palestinians human animals, a language which incites genocidal actions. It's time to drop the policy of controlled chaos in the Middle East.
The war has killed more than 15,500 Palestinians so far, including at least 6,150 children.
Due to Israeli bombardment, about 60% of homes in Gaza have been destroyed, while at least 50,000 families are now homeless.
Hundreds of demonstrations have taken place in solidarity with Palestinians in Italy since October 7, and more will be held in upcoming days in different Italian cities, including Turin, Genoa, and Oristano. Max Civili, Rome.
And that does it for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
After weeks of continuous Israeli regime bombardment of Gaza, the real death toll is likely much higher than what has already been reported. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, it took just one mention of the more than 15,000 Palestinians killed in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza for senior Netanyahu advisor Mark Regev to revert to the line that these are Hamas numbers. In a recent interview with Mehdi Hassan on MSNBC, Regev refused to acknowledge that the Zionist regime had killed children in its relentless and indiscriminate bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip, suggesting that the hours of heart-wrenching footage aired daily could not be independently verified. It is true that over the weeks of war in Gaza, the process of gathering and verifying information and footage has become extremely difficult and sometimes impossible. But the primary reason for this is Israel's ongoing push to control the narrative. The Zionist regime has totally sealed off the territory, refusing to grant permission for foreign journalists to enter the war zone. At the same time, at least 53 media workers have been killed in the war since October 7th, making it the deadliest conflict for reporters since the Committee to Protect Journalists began collecting data in 1992. Sharif Abdul Quddus, an independent journalist who worked on an award-winning film about the Zionist regime's killing of Al Jazeera correspondent Shirin Abu Aghele in May 2022, said in an interview with Democracy Now!, "You have a situation where you're killing most of the registered journalists in Gaza, and you are not letting other journalists in." Nadim Houri, executive director of the Paris-based Arab Reform Initiative, told Middle East Eye that Israel is deliberately seeking to control information flow from Gaza. He added, noting that the world is witnessing a full narrative war with Israel deploying its usual arsenal, it is also trying to influence coverage through deliberate misinformation. He compared the situation to the lead-up to the 2003 U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, when claims from the Bush administration were parroted by mainstream media without scrutiny. This had devastating consequences then, and this is having devastating consequences today. Journalists and media workers who aren't directly killed by the Zionist regime's shelling have been paralyzed by the devastation of communication networks due to ongoing bombardments and the absence of fuel and electricity. At the start of the war, the Zionist regime's war minister, Yoav Gallant, declared a full siege on the population of 2.3 million people in Gaza, citing a fight against human animals, as he claimed. Other journalists have lost their families in Israeli airstrikes on civilian structures, including Al Jazeera correspondent Wael Dahoudo, who received news of the killing of his wife, son, daughter, and grandson while live on air. Despite the Zionist regime's blackout on Gaza, the casualty numbers provided by local authorities and international organizations are widely seen as reliable, just as they have been in past wars. On rare occasions, the Zionist regime's military has allowed reporters from international news networks to embed with its troops in Gaza, on condition that they surrender their materials to Israeli authorities before publication. Mohammad Shahada, chief of communications at the Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor, told Middle East Eye, "Any journalist, foreign journalist, going into Gaza is going in on three conditions. Stick to Israeli tours, go where they want to go, and see what they want you to see." Journalists embedding with the Israeli regime troops have been barred from speaking with Palestinians, Shahada added, pointing to some of the international coverage of the siege of Ashrafa Hospital, which did not include Palestinian voices, even as thousands were sheltering inside the facility. The Zionist regime's chokehold on information from Gaza is just one aspect of its efforts to control the narrative. Israel's permanent representative to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, has taken his government's campaign against Hamas numbers to another level. While sitting at the Security Council, Erdogan recently launched a tirade of accusations against the UN itself, saying, "Every number from the so-called Ministry of Health is Hamas. Many UNRWA workers in Gaza are themselves members of Hamas," he claimed, adding, "The time has come to bust the myth of UN-supplied facts." His comments weren't the least bit surprising. Since the beginning of this war, more than 100 UNRWA workers in Gaza have been killed in Israeli regime attacks, some of which have targeted schools turned shelters funded and operated by the agency. This is despite the fact that all the agency's staff in Gaza are vetted and their names shared with the Zionist regime, Julia Tuma, spokesperson for UNRWA, told the New York Times. Alessandro Accorsi, a senior analyst of technology and conflict with the International Crisis Group, told MEE that in past conflicts, while the Israeli regime army has been slow to release casualty figures, the data has more or less aligned with that of the Gaza Health Ministry. But the current war is different. As the tide of international public opinion shifts in favor of Palestinians, the international blank check the Zionist regime had at the beginning of the war to fight Hamas is running out. Accorsi said, "If Israel had to confirm the death toll now, this would give a big push to calls for a humanitarian ceasefire." Indeed, after weeks of continuous Israeli regime bombardment of Gaza, many analysts warn that the real death toll is likely much higher than what has already been reported, due to the near impossibility of tracking and documenting every case. Thousands of bodies are believed to still be trapped under the rubble, while others have likely been buried without official notice. What the Zionist regime calls Hamas numbers could indeed be wrong, not because they are inflated, but because they do not capture the full extent of the horrifying reality on the ground in Gaza.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran. And we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil Dear listeners, in the previous episodes, we were discussing the different objectives of the ethical instructions mentioned in the supplications. We said the practical and ethical instructions mentioned in the supplications, those are not deniable. And this is specifically true about the case of Sahifatu Sajjadiyya. And we said one of the factors which led to these instructions in the language of supplication was the specific situation of Imam alayhi salam in that time, and the fact that in that time there was no reliable narrator at the side of this Imam. So those narrators might have been present, but they did not dare to communicate with Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. So that is why Imam alayhi salam try to educate some students using the formation of supplication and dua. One of the things Imam Sajjad alayhi salam teaches us is that he teaches us how to treat others, and he talks about the rights of the neighbors. For example, in the 26th supplication of Sahifatu Sajjadiyya, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says, وَتَوَلَّنِي فِي جِيرَانِي وَمَوَالِيَّ الْعَارِفِينَ بِحَقِّنَا وَوَفِّقْهُمْ لِإِقَامَةِ سُنَّتِكَ وَالْأَخْذِ بِمَحَاسِنِ أَدَبِكَ. And Imam says, asking God earnestly, O Allah, guide me to be good towards my neighbors and followers who have acknowledged our right. الْعَارِفِينَ بِحَقِّنَا. So this is only one important condition. Imam alayhi salam is praying for those who have known and recognized their rights. And then he continues, وَوَفِّقْهُمْ لِإِقَامَةِ سُنَّتِكَ. Guide them to keep your religion, to follow your morals in being kind to the needy. في إرفاق ضعيفهم وسد خلتهم, in reforming their defects, in visiting the sick, وعيادة مريضهم وهداية مسترشديهم, and guiding the seekers of guidance, in advising the consultees, welcoming the comers and preserving their secrets, covering their defects and supporting the wronged. These are all the things Imam Sajjad alayhi salam asks from the Almighty Allah, and actually is teaching us as those ones who are reciting these supplications that these are the rights we need to be careful about regarding our jiran, regarding our neighbors. So it is observed that in all of these constructive pieces of advice, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has great positive feelings towards the neighbors.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo keshti ab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az bala va pas. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the merciful God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah. Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, as we said, Imam Sajjad has mentioned different things educating people in the formation of supplication. And the rights of the neighbors is one of them, and treating the others is completely discussed in the 26th supplication of Sahifatul Sajjadiyya. One of the parts of this 26th supplication is in which Imam alayhi salam talks about husn al-dhan. Imam says, وَأَسْتَعْمِلُ حُسْنَ الظَّنِّ فِي كَافَتِهِمْ. O Allah, make me trust in them all and be pious to them. وَأَتَوَلَّ بِالْبِرِّ عَامَّتَهُمْ وَأَغُضَّ بَصَرِي عَنْهُمْ عِفَّةِ وَأَلِينُ جَانِبِي لَهُمْ تَوَاضُعًا. Imam asked the Almighty Allah to help him be pious to them, to lower his eyes continently, to be humble to them, to be kind and merciful to the afflicted ones, and to love them truly. So in all these constructive pieces, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is teaching us to have positive feelings towards the neighbors. And we should know that according to the Islamic code, until 40 houses on each side of one's house are considered as one's neighbors. And if these principles are carried out, we can imagine what utopias persons like Plato and Aristotle have had in their minds. So Under such conditions, the dominance of human ethics and principles will lead the society without interference of the governors. These ethical instructions are to secure the social justice. And of course, no government and governor is needed for controlling these things because these are in the consciences of the people. So they are charters for living peacefully and for modifying behaviors and speeches and of course for controlling one's imaginations. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In the United States, Special Counsel Jack Smith has countered Donald Trump's attempts to wriggle out of the election subversion case. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Special Counsel Jack Smith is rebutting attempts by former President Donald Trump to have the election-related indictment against him dismissed in Washington, D.C., according to court filings docketed on Monday, 6th of November. No other president has engaged in conspiracy and obstruction to overturn valid election results and illegitimately retain power, prosecutors wrote in a nearly 80-page document. The indictment squarely charges the defendant for his conduct, and the defendant's constitutional and statutory challenges to it are meritless. The special counsel Jack Smith was responding to a set of motions by Trump's legal team asking federal judge Tanya Chutkan to dismiss the four federal charges filed against the former president in Washington, D.C. earlier this year. Those charges included conspiracy to defraud the United States and conspiracy to obstruct Congress's certification of President Joe Biden's 2020 election victory. Donald Trump pleaded not guilty to all the charges and denied wrongdoing, while characterizing the case as politically motivated. Last month, Trump's lawyers argued that the former president was in part engaging in constitutionally protected speech during the conduct alleged in the indictment and his past Senate impeachment trial, which did not end in a conviction and therefore precluded further criminal prosecution. They wrote that the former president is a target of selective and vindictive prosecution and asked the court to strike allegations in the indictment related to actions at the Capitol on 6th of January 2021. But in Monday, 6th of November's court filings, prosecutors countered each of the claims, arguing Donald Trump used deceit, trickery, or dishonest means to push his scheme to defraud the United States after the 2020 election, based on accusations that Trump knowingly made false statements to the public and government officials. Any speech that the defendant used to carry out the conspiracy, fraud, and obstruction crimes charged in the indictment is categorically excluded from the protections of the First Amendment, prosecutors wrote. The special counsel's arguments on Monday included some of the most explicit references the prosecutor has made connecting Donald Trump to the U.S. Capitol siege, for which more than 1,100 people have been charged. Jack Smith alleged in his first filing that Donald Trump directed a large crowd to the Capitol on 6th of January 2021 and later exploited the violence. In his second court filing on Monday, 6th of November, the special counsel wrote that the 6th of January was the day that each of the defendants' criminal conspiracies came to a head, and argued those events were included in the indictment because they provided necessary context for the criminal conduct with which he's charged. Jack Smith also emphasized Trump's ongoing support and championing of January 6 defendants, writing Trump has promoted and extolled the events of that day. While the violent attack was ongoing, the defendant told rioters that they were very special and that we love you. In the years since then, Jack Smith continued, Donald Trump has championed rioters as great patriots and proclaimed 6th of January 2021 as a beautiful day. In court filings and on his social media, the former president has alleged the case against him is politically motivated and meant to target him during the presidential election. But Jack Smith pushed back in another court filing on Monday, arguing the indictment is predicated on facts and law and not animus. This prosecution stands upon the bedrock principle of equal justice under law, the special counsel contended. The defendant's sweeping claims of selective and vindictive prosecution are unsupported by any evidence and lack any merit. Trump's attempts to dismiss the case are not his first. The former president is also urging Judge Tanya Chutkan to toss the indictment based on claims of presidential immunity, arguing he's shielded from prosecution because the actions described in the indictment occurred whilst he was president. The judge has yet to rule on that argument, but in the meantime, Donald Trump's defense team has asked her to pause the case until she issues an order. Trial in the case is currently set for March, and Jack Smith's team wrote in a separate court filing on Monday, 6th of November, that prosecutors opposed the requested stay in the case. American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered the same story. Prosecutors in Donald Trump's Washington, D.C. election subversion trial filed a rebuttal against his request to dismiss charges as meritless, writing, "The defendant stands alone in American history for his alleged crimes. No other president has engaged in conspiracy and obstruction to overturn valid election results and illegitimately retain power." Donald Trump had previously claimed that because his attempt to influence the election failed, he shouldn't be accused of wrongdoing. However, special counsel Jack Smith's team countered, providing the analogy that robbers would still be charged even if they were captured en route to a bank robbery. They continued, "A conspiracy can be committed even if the object of the conspiracy is unattainable." Jack Smith also rejected Donald Trump's First Amendment defenses because he didn't just lie in saying the 2020 election was stolen, instead launching attacks at the proper function of the government process by blaming specific states like Georgia for counting dead non-resident, non-citizen, or otherwise ineligible voters. The former president's lawyers have 10 days to reply before U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan makes a ruling on the dismissal motion. Trump's trial is set to begin on 4th of March. British news for The Independent has also covered the same story. Prosecutors with Special Counsel Jack Smith's office are calling on Judge Tanya Chutkan to reject former President Donald Trump's efforts to have the election subversion and conspiracy charges against him dismissed, writing in a Monday 6th of November court filing that Mr. Trump stands alone in American history for his alleged crimes, and pointing out that cases cited by the ex-president's lawyers don't support the arguments that they've made. No other president has engaged in conspiracy and obstruction to overturn valid election results and illegitimately retain power. The indictment squarely charges the defendant for his conduct, and the defendant's constitutional and statutory challenges to it are meritless. In the 79-page court filing opposing two separate motions filed by Mr. Trump's legal team, Assistant Special Counsels James Pierce, John Pelletieri, and Senior Assistant Special Counsels Thomas Windham and Molly Gaston noted that the indictment returned against the ex-president by a Washington, D.C. grand jury over the summer accused him of perpetrating an unprecedented campaign of deceit to attack the very functioning of the federal government to collect, count, and certify votes to obstruct the January 6th congressional proceeding at which the election results are certified, and to disenfranchise millions of American voters. They further described Donald Trump's actions as part of a concerted criminal effort to overturn the presidential election results and prevent the lawful transfer of power to his successor.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a very interesting question and investigating a very pertinent and as well as a very controversial subject. Before we get to that, however, we would like to mention that currently we are in the Ayyam Fatimiyah. These are the days in which the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, Salamullah alayhim, they mourn the demise of the lady Fatimatu Zahra, Salamullah alayha, and her martyrdom. Because as you know, these days fall between two very significant days. According to many hadiths, one of these two days is the day in which and on which she passed away, and she departed from this world, and she achieved the rank of martyrdom. So here at IRIB English Radio and The Key, we would like to offer our esteemed listeners condolences on this very sad and on these very sad and solemn days. The question we want to pose today is this. As you know, one of the customs that a lot of Muslims, they follow and they do this, is that they visit the graves of the deceased. They go there, they visit the graves, they may wash the graves, they may recite Quran for the deceased person, Sometimes the grave of the person they're visiting is a very significant person. It could be one of the ulama, one of the scholars. It could be one of the anbiya. It could be one of the imams, alayhim as-salam. You know, and they recite these ziyarat, they recite duas there, you know. But according to a lot of Muslim sects, this is an innovation, a bid'at in religion, and is impermissible. It's incorrect, and it should not be done. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining this question, looking at the conduct of the Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. According to a hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, the Lady Fatima salamullah alayha, she would visit the graves of the shuhada, the martyrs. As you know, in the beginning of the first, after the first battles, the battles which were fought between the Muslims and the infidels, many Muslims were martyred, and such as the uncle of the Prophet Hamza and others, and they became known as the shuhada, the martyrs. They were buried there, according to the Imam alayhi salam, the Lady Fatima, she would visit the graves of these martyrs every morning. Every Saturday morning, she would visit the graves of these martyrs and pay her homage and pilgrimage to these noble people. You know, she would pray and recite Quran for them and whatnot, right? So, and we know that the Lady Fatima, right, amongst the, if we don't consider her an infallible, definitely her conduct as a companion of the Holy Prophet, as one of the closest of the companions of the Holy Prophet, her conduct is a hujjat and is binding according to all of the sects within Islam, and it shows us the legitimacy of such an act. Otherwise, the Prophet would definitely have prohibited this from having occurred. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the permissibility of visiting the graves of the deceased and the great noble Muslims, according to the conduct of the Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Hezbollah resistance movement hits Israeli military targets, retaliation for strikes on southern Lebanon. Israel is launching fresh strikes on Gaza after killing more than 15,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children, in the besieged coastal territory. Also in the headlines, people around the world hold rallies to show solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn Israeli genocide in Gaza. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. Israel has launched new attacks across the Gaza Strip one day after the end of a week-long ceasefire, leaving nearly 175 people dead. The latest airstrikes targeted the cities of Rafah, Khan Yunis, and Maghazi refugee camp. The Israeli army says it hit more than 400 targets overnight.